Hello and welcome to Reflex Point, a weekly podcast where we review and discuss the series Robotech one episode at a time. We're your host, Major Medina.
I'm Paul Marquez.
And this week we're talking episode 10, Blind Game. Blind Game first appeared on American television on March 15, 1985, and the synopsis reads, Chiron ignores orders to fire a warning shot and directly blasts the SDF-1's radio tower, knocking out communications. Rick's squad escorts Lisa as they scout ahead through hostile territory, but an ambush results in Lisa's capture. All right, so before we start discussing this episode, we had a listener point out that we forgot to rate last week's episode.
I guess that Early's Alzheimer's is kicking in, so.
Huge oversight on our part. We apologize. So I will hand it over to you, Paul. What do you rate last episode?
So I give the episode itself a 9.
Okay, excellent. You had mentioned that it was a pivotal episode.
Yeah, it seems like it shaped the direction the characters' lives were going to take, you know?
Absolutely. And who is your MVP?
Hey, strangely enough, after a lot of antagonizing internal struggle, I have to say, and I please don't laugh, would be Jan Morris.
That's interesting. I like it. Can you explain why? Can you explain why to our listener who's now screaming at their phone?
So she was a good tertiary character against Min Mei. You know what I mean?
Cuz yes.
To me the episode seemed like it was Min Mei's struggle with this becoming a star. Like it was defining exactly who she was going to become, and her one adversary against it was Jan Morris. And then it still kind of showed a human side to Jan Morris, you know, that aging star that's trying to not go down without a fight, but at the same time, like, still had that mindset of, you know, that I can't be beat, especially in this type of environment. You know, like, this is something that should just be handed to her, you know, on her fame alone, which probably took a lot of hard work to get to, but yeah. It was a passing of the torch, you know?
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. I rate the episode an 8.5, so close to yours. Thought it was a great episode. Maybe not as much action. And you know, it's the Miss Macross show. And I did love the humor, again, of them playing the commercial over and over again. But, and surprisingly, my MVP for this episode is one Miss Jan Morris.
Wow.
Look, it's two parts for me, and maybe this is not the greatest reasons, but one, I felt sorry for her, and I felt sorry for her for the first time in watching this series, not only losing the Miss Macross, but prior to that, where she was just like, I can't believe I'm even here, and you know what? It brings some realism to somebody who was visiting Macross Island and has been transported to the other side of Pluto.
Yeah, she's on some kind of USO tour or something, and then now her life gets flipped upside down.
Yeah, and she's just got to have, you know, the trauma from all of that on top of, oh, now I still have to perform. I still have to dance for you, you know? And then when she walked away from Min Mei, I felt the pain in her heart. The second part is just, I'm trying to do a mea culpa or make up for all the years that I've hated her.
That's exactly how I felt too, because I remember as a kid going, oh, and now I'm like, oh no, it was the assistant. Forget that assistant.
All right. Well, there you go. There's our ratings and MVP for last episode, Miss Macross.
And just to take it back a little bit, like, I don't even think that she minded, because like how you were saying that she... to the realization, I still have to dance in front of you, that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I think she was more like on this ship trying to find a spot for herself. Because, you know, I mean, at first they probably weren't even worried about like normal life moving on, you know?
Sure.
And so down to earth, blue collared people were probably helping with salvaging, with stuff that they could do. And she was like, all I know how to do is perform. And probably for a while, there was no need for that. So right. Imagine feeling that helpless and useless, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, that's that even more reason to give her MVP status.
And so finally, when something she was good at happened and then she loses, that had to be the... the coup de grace.
Yeah, it's trauma on trauma right
there.
Yeah. Poor Jan Morris. So, back to Blind Game. We start with the narrator. The narrator's back.
Yes.
So, Zentradi spies had gone to recon the Mismatch Cross. Their end result's not exactly as planned, and they are baffled by what they saw.
Right, so... the three pilots are being debriefed with Exidor and Britai.
Yes.
They are shook up by what they, obviously shook up by what they saw, and then almost dying as well. And they described, like you said, tiny military uniforms.
And that looking at them gave me a strange feeling I can't explain. And he kind of has his hand over his chest, kind of beating. Like,
do you think he's talking about arousal?
I think he is talking about arousal. So like the way they're showing it is like a little flutter in the heart. So I don't know if it's like a precursor to some kind of like longing or love or just, I guess, sexually aroused, right?
Yeah. I mean, from a warrior race that is totally segregated, the genders.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like seeing something like that, you would be like, well, they look like us. And if that's what our females look like, why don't we do that?
Huh. That's interesting.
So then Bronn tries to explain that he believes he witnessed weapons.
Right. And they're arguing about that.
And this account is all over the place just because, again, these guys are so traumatized and they can't all agree on something. I mean, it would be, when you think of a military briefing, let's just say you and I were standing up in front of... our officer, we'd try to be on the same page about something. Here's what we saw. Here's what it did,
Right.
And these guys, here's what we saw, but each of them saw something different. Each of them think it's something different.
Yeah.
None of them can come up with a straight sentence about it.
Yeah, that would be frustrating. And exactly leads into Britai, who wants to send another recon patrol. And then Exidor saying, I want to capture one of them alive. So I want to talk about stakes. So imagine this was an episode of He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Skeletor and who knows who, Beast Man and Moss Man are sitting there talking. And they're like, we're going to capture one of them, So let's say they want to capture Man-at-Arms. Because in the show, nobody's going to die. Like them saying they're going to capture somebody isn't really all that ominous.
It is the most benign capture someone you've ever heard in your life, right?
Right. But because we've seen so many people die, when they say we want to capture one of them alive, man, that's like, are we going to lose a main character? What's happening here? Because this is giving me anxiety where an episode of He-Man, an episode of G.I. Joe wouldn't.
Right. Yeah, I totally hear you.
And I say all that just based on how I actually felt when he's saying, let's capture one of them alive. I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like what's happening here. I like them separated. But, this is kind of a harbinger of, hey, things are going to change. And I hate change.
And to me, this makes me think of that Exidor is more of a, more than a warrior. Like all the other ones, he's bred for war, so he's got to have some fight in him. But he's also a scientist, and he shows that by the interest that he always, hey, let's capture one of them, because isn't he the one that exclaims too that too bad the recording, right? Too bad the recording was destroyed.
Right, right,
like,
yeah.
I bet you Britai is like, okay, man, I wish we had that, but
yeah,
he's still focused on fighting,
Mm-hmm. I wish we had data because that would make us more effective. But, we're going to have to capture one of them. That's when it goes back to Bronn and Rico fighting, and Bronn punches Rico. I don't know if I would do that in front of a superior officer.
Right. I mean, you'd have to be pretty shook up in order to start fighting like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is good because they're going to explain, first off, Britai calls a stop to it because he's the commander and is like, look, you guys have bungled this, which I love the fact that he used the word bungled. But, Exidor is watching this and going like, look, it's so much more than just what they were wearing. It's more like we suddenly don't know what we're up against. And I think that's what Bron, Rico, and Konda are feeling.
And Exidor's ability to recognize this, you know? Like, this isn't how Zentradi act. You know, what the hell's going on?
Right. Right. And saying that, look, it's going to start affecting morale, which at first in my head was like, what do you mean it's going to start affecting morale? But yeah, if you don't know what you're up against as a soldier, if you're suddenly confused by it, if you have a brand new emotion, that's going to cause some issue.
Right. And it's going to spread like a virus. So you as of right now, it appears you guys have no defense against it.
Yeah. So it makes sense to me. That Exidor is like, look, we gotta do something about this. We gotta do something about this now. And obviously Britai agrees. Then Exidor is like, look, we're gonna have to start acting more aggressively.
Okay. Okay, wait. Yeah. This is go ahead. Because this is
I was gonna say that that his suggestion, right, excites Britai.
Yes, it does.
And then immediately goes to, why don't we discuss this further in our quarters.
Okay, so perhaps Robotech was a little more progressive than we thought in its time, right?
Okay.
Because was that kind of weird? It was kind of weird.
Yes, it was kind of weird, and I caught it.
Well, because Britai says, I love nothing more than aggression. Let's go. Let me show you some aggression in my quarters. Like, why are we going to my quarters to discuss this?
Okay, here's what I've come up with. So they're in a debriefing room. So he's basically saying, yes, we're going to have to formulate a plan. Why don't we go to a place where there are two chairs? Because at this point, Britai is the only one sitting down. Exidor has to stand up the entire time. So what I think it was is we need to think about this more. Why don't we go back to my quarters, which is a much more comfortable place for us and has a table. So where we can figure this all out. But here's the thing. Do you think Exidor gets to sit down when he's over in Britai's quarters?
I have so many responses for that. I hopefully the poor guy does. Okay. I mean, as a courtesy, let's let the poor man sit down. But yeah, that was a little weird, right?
It is wildly weird, and I had to watch the original Japanese version just to see if it played out slightly different. It didn't. It played out pretty much exactly the same. The words are slightly different, but for the most part, the innuendo and the suggestiveness is there.
The potential innuendo, right? Because you could read it and not do it, but you know, if you're going over it with a fine-tooth comb the way we are, you catch it, you know?
We are not suggesting in any way that Exidor and Britai are in a relationship.
No, not at all. So then the narrator cuts in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what does he explain to us?
Constant battle is taking a toll on the SDF-1. Much of the robotechnology of the fortress is no longer functioning.
However, they have managed to get a message through to the United Earth Defense Headquarters.
Yes, and finally getting a response from it. So the United Earth Defense Headquarters is saying, look, for security purposes, we can't give you the information on our support systems. I don't know exactly what that means. Like the backup that they could possibly provide?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think it was. You know, SDF-1 probably sent a message saying, okay, you know, here's where we are. Like, what's the plan, guys? Because you know, they would think, Earth Defense Force has got to have a plan. They, you know, in the months that it's taken us to reach, like, Mars now, right? They're somewhere over there.
Right.
They've got a plan. And so, hey, guys, what are we going to coordinate? What's the plan? What do we do? And it almost makes me guess that the Earth Defense Force is like, we don't know what we're going to do, Holmes. Like, we don't. But they can't just say that because...
Right. I mean, they're saying, hey, look, the aliens are more interested in attacking you, so they're given instructions not to return to Earth.
So, yeah, because, you know, imagine being felt like you're a decoy out there now, you know?
Right.
Like, that'd be tough.
I mean, that in total kind of tells you Earth, despite the months that they've had to prepare, are not prepared whatsoever.
Yeah.
So then Lisa's wondering why they aren't jamming the communications. And Global, rightfully so, explains, they're trying to get intel. I love the fact that Global is always in step. He's not one step ahead, he's not one step behind, but he's always in step with the military tactics of the Zentradi.
Right, and like a true commander, he does also, too, say that he understands the need to buy time. So, you know, when the message comes into them, maybe he's telling, you know, he tells them, look, maybe they just need us to buy some time. And that's why they won't let us come home, as opposed to, like, totally abandoning us and making us, you know, making the enemy chase us around.
Right, right. So you have what I would have felt like is what Claudia's thinking. And, you know, a much more centered and relaxed Global is like, well, no, we just need to buy time.
And then that's where Lisa goes, chimes in with what she's, why they're not blocking that transmission. And Global thinks the enemy is being clever and trying to intercept now rather than block.
Yes. Yeah. Always in step, Global is. So then we're cut to Zentradi battle pods attacking.
I think Max covered Ben's six at a certain point, right?
Yes.
But Ben was hit. And the Veritech is leaking a liquid fuel. That surprised me that they had liquid fuel.
Yeah, yeah. It's and I've seen a little bit of this on like the Robotech discussion group on Facebook. Maybe it's oil. I don't know. They do say it's fuel.
And if liquid was released in the vacuum of space, would you see it trail like that, or would it instantly evaporate?
Well, it depends, because I think for where they are, I think it would ice over.
Okay, so it kind of looked a little white and wispy coming out of his tank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I suppose that could be happening.
I'm just trying to think of what function they would be using fuel for. Maybe that controls heating and cooling.
Right, right. Or that fuel is some kind of catalyst for the reflex engines, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's how they spark the thermonuclear reaction.
So there's a little Bic lighter in there flicking as it needs, and then it lights it up, causes the explosion, starts the process.
There you go. We figured it out.
We are bio-maintenance engineers, okay?
So then Rick gets a little bit hot under the collar and states that he's responsible for the team. He's going to come in anyway. He's going to disregard that order and gives Lisa, you know, the what for, saying that she may be comfortable gambling with their lives. And then Roy interrupts Lisa, who's speaking back to Rick, and says, "That's enough, Commander Hayes. This time, Lieutenant Hunter just happens to be right." Just an interesting dynamic there that Roy's able to cut in. Basically tell Lisa to be quiet and that whatever Rick is thinking is correct.
He does it tactfully, though. You know, he's like, you know, Commander Hayes, this time Rick happens to be right, you know, like letting her know, you know, you're the man. But on this one, we got to give it to him, you know, and then goes as far to tell Rick, "You talk too much, Lieutenant Hunter."
Yeah, yeah, I do like that he throws that in. And that probably is in service of Lisa. So then Vermilion Group peels off, heads back to the SDF-1. Cut over to Chiron, who's been ordered to fire a warning shot across the bow of the SDF-1. He's planning instead to accidentally fire at the radar tower, which pleases him to no end. In fact, he goes into his maniacal laughter there. Again, supporting the idea that he is abusing the flower of life.
Right, right. Something not straight with this guy.
Right. They don't show him as like implicitly evil, and I think that's important for all the Zentradi. They're not evil. They're attempting to do a task, and Chiron sees that objective being accomplished a different way than Britai or Exidor does. But he does have a little bit of something off on him.
Yes, and Chiron and his commander, you know, both agree that this warning shot sounds like one of Exidor's crazy plans.
Yeah.
That makes me believe that, you know, among the others in Trotty, they probably don't hold the same esteem for Exidor as he probably deserves, because he's not like a warrior. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a good point.
A lot of them are probably talking shit behind his back. Like, this little dude is trying to tell him, why are we messing around with this? Why? I don't get it. You know?
That's a strong point. Yeah. Okay, so I have to kind of call this out because I need it to be able to make sense of this entire episode. So Rick and his team were fighting. They peel back off because Ben's Veritech is damaged. They go back to the SDF-1 per Roy. And then do we cut to days later, minutes later? Because at this point, Rick's waiting in the park for Min-May. So is it that Rick goes back to the SDF-1, gets dressed, and then immediately goes to the park? Or is this much later on?
My guess, the way I've put it out in my head is hours, that it's hours later. I wouldn't say days, months. I don't know, honestly. What do you think?
I think you're right in that it's hours later. He knew he was going to be off duty, and he had set up a date with Min-May. Then we see Vanessa, Kim, and Sammy approach, asking him, who are you waiting for? Do you have a date? Which is quite bold, right?
I mean, it's
But what I've come to understand is they're all into him. They see this guy. They think he's single. Maybe he's single. Maybe he's not. We like Lieutenant Rick Hunter. We always hear him and see him talk to Commander Hayes. But, you know, everybody's out in their civvies. And, hey, are you out here waiting for a date? Because if you're not, well, what about one of us, you know, kind of thing.
Right. I never thought of it in those terms, but you're absolutely right. Rick Hunter has got to be a good-looking guy, right?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, there's something about the Bridge Bunnies witnessing his back and forth with Lisa. And, you know, at some point, they've been wanting to tell Lisa, hey, you know what? Kiss my ass. It's just what happens with work, you know, when someone above you tells you something. And he does it so that he kind of becomes a hero in that sense.
Right, right. Much more attractive. Right?
Yeah. And there he is, you know, looking his best because Min-May's come, or, you know, he's expecting Min-May to come. Of course, they're going to saunter over, you know?
They're teasing him in front of each other. But on the other hand, they're all like, well, look, if he's not on a date, maybe. So then we have Sammy going, is she really beautiful? And then Rick gives a great answer. You know, beautiful isn't the word. If only Rick was able to somehow say that to Min-May. It seems the words come easily to him if he's talking to Roy or to anybody else. But I just don't think he ever expresses that to Min-May.
Yeah, it's like when, like, you know, you can tell your buddy, like, man, this girl is amazing. And then to her, you can't. You can't. You're just incapable of doing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Just never comes up. And then Sammy with a great response, like, is she any prettier than we are?
To me, she says it dreamily. Don't you think that she's kind of just, like, how beautiful is she? Is what does she look like, you know?
Right, right. Oh, and then Rick, God bless him here, gives a great diplomatic answer. You know, I don't think comparisons are...
Right. He goes, I don't think it would be polite to to compare.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, in any position I've ever been in like that, I wish I had had enough forethought to come up with a diplomatic answer like that. And then the heartbreaking response from Vanessa. Well, in that case, I guess I'm not included. Just, that, you know, kind of self-deprecating. And yeah, she's drawn a little frumpy, right?
Right, right.
But damn you, 80s cartoons and movies, for just assuming that the person with glasses is not as beautiful as the rest of the people.
That's what they do, huh? When they tried to make someone, when the point was that someone else was a little less attractive than someone else, they threw glasses on that person.
Quickly, throw some glasses on them. But yes, that's exactly what they did, you know? Throw glasses on her and suddenly, oh, okay. Well, she can't be the main love interest or anything like that. But I don't know. It's a little bit heartbreaking for her to have that self-awareness of it. And then to have Kim come in and say, like, oh, yes, you are. You know, us single girls got to stay together. And it's that line that made me realize that that's the reason they came up to Lieutenant Hunter and were potentially maybe looking to be asked out. You know, if he was sitting there alone, well, maybe just maybe.
That's interesting. I always thought they were just busting his balls. I'm sure they remember the lingerie
incident.
The incident. And, you know, what would have been funny is I wonder if, like, every so often a piece of lingerie is in his VT, you know, cockpit, and they mess with him. You know, that'd be hilarious.
Well, look, this is an example of my theory of good-looking dude, not good-looking dude. If they didn't consider Rick a good-looking guy, then the lingerie incident would have been traumatizing. You know, but the fact that they can laugh about it means, oh, well, they find him attractive.
So you think if it's Ben Dixon on that bench, they're approaching him?
Not at all.
Not a chance, right?
Yeah. So then a phone robot interrupts and is looking for Rick. So he calls it over. I love that he's going to take the call, but all the girls just queue up right behind him on the bench. And they're like, we're a part of this.
What's going on? Ooh, who's calling, you know?
And it's Min May calling it. And here's the thing. While they're talking, because I didn't really remember this scene, but while they're talking and like, oh, is she beautiful? Is she more beautiful than us? I'm like, yeah, she is. She just won Miss Macross.
Right.
Like, you guys don't know who you're up against. I hope you get to find out who you're up against. So I was kind of happy that they stuck around for the phone call. And it's Min May calling to say she can't make it. She has singing lessons.
And the Bridge Bunnies recognize her.
Yes, they do. And so Rick is kind of upset, right? Starts telling her, like, you haven't seemed to have any time for me. And it's finally then that they decide to give Rick some privacy. I think it's Kim who's like, points like, let's get the hell out of here. This is awkward. Let them end the relationship. We'll try again later. And Min May ends that call abruptly. I think for many people, especially those who are not in love with Min May, this is the right amount of Min May to have in an episode.
I agree. But, you know, it gives her a kind of callousness, you know. But now that with things that you've said where Rick hasn't said something.
Yeah.
You know, it misses very opportune times to actually say something. You know, for her, I'm starting to see that she doesn't know what she's doing to his feelings, you know.
Yeah, and that's important. That's taking out, like, intention or, because I think that's what riles people up so much is, like, she has a callousness, but is it because she intentionally is just kind of toying with him? And I don't think that's the case.
Right. In this case, I think she's just super busy.
Yeah, just doesn't have the opportunity, made a date, can't keep it for reasons outside of her control. And, you know, Rick throws in the little jab about, you know, ever since you've become a celebrity, which again is like, that's a low blow in my opinion, because from the onset, that's what she expressed her wishes were. Now that she gets that chance, yeah, it does mean less time. And especially with the kind of whirlwind way that she won the Miss Macross competition, she's getting that opportunity. Of course, she's going to take it.
And you have to imagine stardom changes everything overnight.
Right, right. Her recognition level on Macross Island, which was already apparently high, has gone through the roof at this point. And it's like, hey, look, I'm sure she has managers and people telling her, we got to strike while the iron is hot. You know, we got to raise this stock real quick. Once we get back to Earth, you are going to be worldwide because everybody's going to want to hear your story. In fact, you're going to be the face of the 70,000 people who were stuck in isolation on this ship.
Right. And when 70,000 people disembark, we want them to tell everyone who you are.
Yeah. We want you flying out of the SDF-1 on your brand new fan liner. It's rough, but I don't think Min May's being intentionally mean. But I do think Rick is, and it is a direct result of how he's feeling. So I don't blame him for it, but it's just it's a complicated relationship already. Always has been.
It's an unfortunate series of events happening for Rick.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then the fact that he has to go up in the air and almost die every single day, that's got to be the cherry on top.
So then we switch over to Chiron's ship getting into position, right?
Yes.
Then a countdown happens and they blow up. Okay, so they blow up the planet Palmyre. Is that what they say?
So yes, they pronounce it Palmyre, like P-A-W-M-I-R. It's, I believe it's spelled P-A-L-M-I-R, Palmyre.
Okay, what planet is that?
Went down a little rabbit hole looking for this, right?
Because so did I, and I'm like,
I was excited because I was like, oh, this might give us their location, but it's not a planet. I wasn't able to find anything on it.
Yeah, neither was I. No,
yeah,
I mean, there was a lot of things kind of like explained, you know, of something, but none of it was astronomy related at all.
Right, right. It was kind of land based related, so maybe an incorrect designation to call it a planet.
So this might be one of those things that's just not solved, right?
Yeah. So I'm assuming they're talking about an asteroid. But yeah, Lisa sees it, saying they may be doing a weapons test. Global orders a yellow alert, which doesn't seem high enough for me. But shields up and the pinpoint barrier system on max.
Set to max defensive strength.
And then the shots fired all around the ship.
And it's there's a lot of damage happens on that shot across the bow, right?
Yeah, shakes the whole ship, causing destruction inside the ship, like roads are being upended. And you get this great shot of Britai watching, and he has this like smile on his face, and half of his face is illuminated by the glow of the blasting from the vid screen he's watching. Then Chiron orders a destroyer into position to fire at the radar tower. And the pilot of that destroyer announces firing at the radar tower as instructed. And then we see a shot of Britai surprised by that. So much for it looking like an accident, right?
Right. Like it totally comes over the intercom and he's like, no.
The shot hits the radar tower despite the pinpoint barrier system converging on the tower at the moment of impact. And then we get a shot inside the ship of the blast coming through, vaporizing at least three people.
Right. So the whole scene I liked a lot. Okay, number one, the destroyer gets into position and I believe it shoots its own main gun, you know, the exact same type of gun that the SDF-1 has, right at the tower.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because it's not one of those beams that is coming out, you know? It's
right.
It's that big yellow one that the SDF-1 takes out a lot of ships with.
You're right. You're right. So we can say, like, they've been holding back firing anything that could cause actual damage to the SDF-1.
They're holding back, but this time it fires. And then, you know, like, of course, all three of those pinpoint barriers are like, oh, and it's just neat that they included that to go up. They all converge to try to block this one shot because, you know, they were like, oh, shit, block it, block it. They did, and they were overpowered, you know?
Yeah.
Now, imagine the damage they would have caused or that it would have caused without those barriers at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it would have blown the bridge right off the ship.
Absolutely, it would have. And then to add insult to injury, the fragments of Palmyre start hitting the ship. And they do this great long shot of the destruction outside of the ship. Like, not only is the ship kind of battered, but you have all this debris from the ship flying around. And we get this computer readout, which has some pretty good little Star Trek references inside of it.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. So we get Stardate, Klingons, and then Enterprise. It's a fun little readout to pause on.
I didn't know that it said Klingon. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Klingons twice. And then Lisa saying it'll take 5 hours to pass through the meteorite fragments. So they called it a planet, and at this point they've called it a meteorite. And we learned that wide range
radar. Yeah, no longer working.
Back over to the bridge of the Zentradi ship, Britai saying fortunate that they survived, and he doesn't seem mad at Chiron.
Yeah, Exidor seems more mad, noting that it was no thanks to Chiron.
Yeah, and Britai just immediately adjusts his thinking. Hey, I wonder if they'll continue to fight without radar.
So Breedye grudgingly admits that it was for the best.
Yes.
Because it will make the next step easier.
Right. So we were in the debriefing room earlier with Breedye and Exidor. Now we're in this kind of a command-style bubble. There's one chair. Again, Exidor doesn't get a chair. Let this poor man sit. Then they call out that the Regalt pods and tarantulas move out, and they launch.
Okay, so Regalt and tarantula, right?
Yes.
First time we're hearing that. Now, when I see a couple of normal-looking pods launch out,
mm-hmm.
and then what looks like a cyclops. Does it look any different to you?
It does look like a cyclops, doesn't it?
Yes.
I didn't think about it.
The only thing I noticed different about it is it had a blue eye.
Oh, huh. No, I didn't notice that. You know what? I took it at kind of face value of like, oh, we're seeing a new ship. But you're right. It does look like a cyclops.
I paused it as many times. It never stops at the right moment to get a good look at it.
Sure.
But it's got those four little, you know, back thing legs, I guess, you know, folded back. It's got that same right. shape. And it's got that eye in the front. And the only thing I noticed different is that blue eye.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to go to the RPG reference guide for these things. Is there a difference in the Regalt pod? I mean, we've been calling them battle pods. Are battle pods and Regalt pods different?
The only... I know there's a recon pod that has kind of like a two flat antenna thing on top of its head.
Okay.
But I didn't see those launching, and I don't know if those are actually Regalt.
Okay. A little bit more research for us to do.
Yes, yes.
Awesome. That's what we love to do. Or, you know, if anybody out there wants to do some research, well, we certainly wouldn't turn it away.
Right. If you jump on the boards and inform us on how dumb we are, we will happily take the knowledge.
Yeah, so they're preparing to send a transmission to the SDF-1, which I was pretty excited about. Okay. Now we get to a confusing part to me. Claudia saying, oh no, that's Lieutenant Hunter's Battaloid, isn't it? And we see a Battaloid floating in space, the head ripped off, and a pilot inside dead. Lisa sees it. She doesn't respond to Claudia. Then Claudia kind of calls her out for not responding, and she says she was daydreaming as she was remembering Rick saying, you know, you may be comfortable gambling with our lives. So, was that Lieutenant Hunter's Battaloid?
And was that couldn't have been Rick, right? The last we saw of him, he was in a pond or in a fountain.
Oh, right, right, right.
After the blast.
Yes, yes. After the blast that just occurred, he's in that same shirt.
So somebody took his Veritech out, I guess?
The same Veritech he's going to be taking out in mere minutes? Or is she just thinking, Rick was right, I am gambling with people's lives? Or did she really think that was Rick? I just don't understand this part.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think it's... Even when you're in an argument with someone, you just can't stand, you know?
Yeah.
If a little bit later on... You were told, man, they were in a car accident and they're messed up or dead.
Mm-hmm.
You might start thinking to yourself of that last argument and thinking, like, did I have to be such a jerk?
I mean, in that case, because Claudia calls it out as Lieutenant Hunter's Battaloid.
Right.
She may not be taking the time to check whether it really is or not. She's taking Claudia at face value and thinking, oh, no, he's dead. And I just had an argument with him.
Where he happened to be right.
Right. Yes. Yes. And I got called out on that. Okay. All right. That seems to make some sense. Although there should have been additional dialogue in the next scene when she's in the Cat's Eye Recon. She'd be like, yeah, I thought you were dead.
For a moment there, I thought you were wiped off existence. But here we are. Then it switches over to Sammy, who's trying to decipher a strange transmission.
Right.
Kim thinks it's from Earth.
Yeah, but Sammy's pretty convinced it's not originating from Earth. And Clovis like, just play it.
Right. He hears the conversation, you know, and he's like, what's up? What's going on here, guys? And that's when he's like, okay, well, how about we listen?
And then we hear the message, in the name of the Zentradi forces, I order you to surrender. The last attack on your ship was a warning with what we will do. You cannot escape. If you wish to live, you must surrender at once. And it starts repeating, and I love that Glovel is like, enough, stop it. This is probably my favorite Henry Glovel saying. When he says a reply isn't warranted, their threats are insulting. Even though I know he's overpowered and he doesn't know the full extent, I'm like, yeah, you do that, man.
Right, right. As any good commander would try to keep the morale, he would, you know, he would try to turn the fear of the troops from the threat to, that's insulting. How right. can they tell us that?
Right.
And then, when someone who's supposed to be okay, you know, is telling you that, then you kind of go, yeah, you're right. Forget those guys. And I would have loved if the transmission from the Zentradi would have been, all your bases are belong to us.
Oh man, they should have done something with the grammar, right? They should have messed it up somehow. Like, is it encoded yet? Yeah, it's encoded. Sure, I think so. Just been a complete mishmash. So again, Glovel being in step with what's going to happen, he thinks they'll begin an attack soon, and tells Lisa to go on recon duty with a VT cover squadron to escort. I know why for the show he's sending Lisa, but I don't understand why. Is she the preeminent cat's eye recon pilot? Or, I mean, I guess that is kind of her job on the bridge.
Yeah, but to send, it just seems like her job is so important on the bridge that risking her in the cat's eye, I don't see the payoff.
I don't either. So then cut to Lisa and the cat's eye recon, Rick flying cover, and Rick saying, ironic that I was chosen to fly cover for you. And Lisa, in upbeat terms, is like, it really is, but I think we can handle it. So again, she's not showing any animosity, and that kind of goes back to episodes before where, you know, Claudia was like, I can't believe you let him talk to you like that. She's like, I don't mind, really, because she is mission focused.
Right. And that's probably, you know, she's comfortable now. She's got a mission. She's got a focus. She's comfortable. And I don't know. Have you ever had that rival at work that you're just like, I can't stand this dude. But then you guys get put on an assignment together. And it's not that you can't stand his work ethic, because he does it good. And when you guys get on a job, you know your guys are going to get it done. And it's like, okay, let's get it done.
That's a great analogy, because it is always, it's not your work or your work ethic. It's just the way you speak.
I don't like the fact that without permission, you take an armored Veritech and you just go out there and fly. But you did take out the enemy and you got us some valuable information, you know?
Yeah. 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 And then Britai says, so they've taken the bait. And he says that because one of the tarantulas is spying on them. Here's my other issue. In fact, it's not an issue. It's just I don't understand. What was Britai's original idea before Chiron took out the radar tower? What was his original idea for capturing one of the Micronians?
Well, let's see. So after the attack, they radioed. Maybe they were expecting a response, a radio response.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Then they would set up some kind of, okay, you know, meet us here to discuss the terms of surrender. Huh. And then once they came in, bam, grab them.
Excellent. Excellent. Love it. Didn't think of it. So then immediately, Britai orders an attack. And the battle pods begin attacking the Vermilion group with Lisa at the center.
Ben exclaims a surprise attack, but it's ordered not to pursue.
Yeah, ordered not to pursue, and then immediately Max says, 4 enemy pods at 4 o'clock, and then Rick tells Ben, all right, stay with the cat's eye, Max and I are going to go pursue.
So how would you take that? Would you take that as, he thinks I'm so good, I'm here to protect the package, or...
I would never take it in the positive way.
Or is he saying, you suck so bad that you stay here and let us, me and Max, go take care of this?
Whoa, Ben, don't get ahead of yourself, all right? we're going to go actually take care of them like we're capable of doing. That's how I would have taken it. And then Lisa's like, hey, why don't you all go?
Yeah, well, because Ben begs to go. And he does it, you know, not in a, I'm going to disobey orders. More of a, you always do this to me. Can I go this time?
Yeah, and Lisa does have that confidence of like, look, I can take care of myself. Who is the co-pilot in the Cat's Eye Recon?
The most unluckiest schmuck you ever met in your life, apparently.
My God, are you are so correct. He doesn't even get named. We get one scene of him where I am not convinced that it wasn't actually a shot of Ben.
He looked like it, right?
Yeah. Because kind of the scene that follows, Lisa orders a change in coordinates, and we get a shot of who I'm suspecting is the co-pilot, but it's just Ben. It's just a shot of Ben.
So, yeah, this poor bastard, he's in there with her, and not for long.
Yeah. Then we have Vanessa at the radar screen getting in the cat's eye feed, finally. But all the planetary fragments are making it difficult to see. Max takes down a battle pod, asks Rick if they have a plan. And Rick is like, we're going to pull back and guard the cat's eye. Then Lisa says the thing you're not supposed to say. I guess the worst is over.
That is guaranteed going to make it worse.
Right? And then immediately see something on the radar too big to be a planetary fragment. Then we see the cat's eye get hit by a fragment, knocking off the radar tower. Exidor orders for the survivors to be captured.
And can you imagine Exidor's excitement? Because, I mean, again, he's the scientist of the Zentradi.
Yeah.
And he's about to get a specimen that they've never had before.
He just wants that data.
And think about it. Now they've got one that they can just pull apart because he's already dead.
Oh.
And they've got one live that they can, whatever they're going to do with a live one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be a windfall for experimentation right there, you know?
How more successful could that mission have been? In fact, I'm sure he's not even angry at Chiron anymore.
Yeah. No, he's not.
So then we see Rick calling to the cat's eye to report their position. Cut over to Lisa, who's unconscious. And a tarantula ship has captured the cat's eye and is carrying it back to a Britai ship.
Right, towing it back in.
And in that one shot, we see Lisa come to and her co-pilot completely dead.
Yeah, he's hunched over.
So then, Britai is informed that the survivors have been captured and are being boarded on the lower deck. Lisa says to leave her and to get out of there now. So that's her direct order, which Rick disregards, not even saying anything. Tells the Vermilion group to hit them from below, and they all go into Guardian configuration, enter the airlock that Lisa just passed through, then immediately fires missiles, multiple missiles, by the way.
And they take out a Scumtrotty or two, don't they?
They sure do. A Scumtrotty, I like that. They do. But you don't follow after someone and then throw missiles towards their direction.
It definitely seems ill-advised.
Yeah. Now, it works out here, and we see a Zentradi get hit by the missile blast. So Max and Ben are firing at the remaining Zentradi, who scatter down a corridor, and Max says he's almost out of ammo, and Ben is too. Lisa, true to form, is telling Rick that he's disobeying orders. Note that the co-pilot is no longer in the back seat. We get a little bit of a shot of Lisa and the backseat of her cat's eye recon. I don't see anybody back there. Poor guy.
Yeah, poor bastard. He's gone.
So then Rick is saying there's no time for protocol. And I love this part. So Britai is told that Micronians have broken into the lower deck to rescue the survivors. This is what I love. Instead of anything else, Britai gets angry and just starts running. Just starts booking it.
He makes a Jesse Owens down the hall.
He does. And I love seeing a commander take that kind of initiative. He doesn't like call anybody else like lock down this or do this or go get him or something like that. He's just like, I'm going to go take care of this shit myself. Go Britai.
Right. He's about to see his carefully laid trap, you know, go to waste. And he's and it's almost an insult to him, you know? He's like, wait, what?
Uh-huh. Love it. Cut back over to Max and Ben. They are out of ammo. Rick goes to pick up Lisa, and then Breitide drops down from above and kicks him down. Then Max runs behind Breitide and gets him in a bear hug.
Yeah, so he's got him with his GU-11, you know, he's got him trapped by the arms.
Yes.
And can you imagine the strain on, like, the what would you say, servos of the arms and legs of the Veritech?
That and that's kind of my question is, like, what's going to give up first? The muscles of a 45-foot-tall Zentradi warrior or the servos and the pneumatic oil pressure of the Veritech?
My guess is the Veritech. I mean, especially you know, up against another lesser Zentradi, I would say the Veritech's going to win out. But we're talking about Breitide, yo. Like,
we are.
I think he could rip a Veritech apart.
No, I think you're right. So then Max tells Ben to fire missiles at 12 o'clock, which blows a hole in the side of the ship. And then Max, man, he fires those, he fires his engines and he's carrying Breitide up to that hole. And we see the suction begin from, a breach in the hull of the side of a ship.
Right.
And Max just throws Breitide out of the ship. Unfortunately, Breitide manages to grab onto the side of the ship. We see everything start getting sucked out. The Veritechs are probably okay, but we do see Lisa start to get sucked up. And then everything seems to go back to normal. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of protective airlock or shield that's protecting that breach in the hull.
What you're going to read in the Jack McKinney books is that the ship somewhat, like, organically repairs itself.
Interesting. Okay. Because, you know, for Max, Ben, and Rick, at this point, they think Breitide's been thrown out into space. Lisa's telling them to burn through the airlocks with their lasers. I'm confused about this part because there is a Breitide-sized hole.
Right.
Why don't they just fly out the hole in the ship?
I think some kind of automatic repair has already gone into effect.
Okay.
And that's why Breitide doesn't just climb back through it either.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay. So automatic repair is happening. That returns normal pressure to the ship. That's why Lisa can say, do you think I can get down now? You can admire me later. So Rick's able to put Lisa down without fear of being sucked out, and they can't go out that. All right. I'll buy it. I don't like it. I don't love it, but yeah, I'll buy it.
It's weak. I'll give you that.
But then this great shot of Breitide walking on the hull of the ship. And again, there must be some kind of protective force field around it so that he's
but
not.
But wait. As Rick puts Lisa down, Max and Ben notice that Rick seems to get weak in the knees around
Commander Hayes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Max has noticed. So Ben says it. Max has appeared to notice it. So at this point, do you think they just like to tease Rick because he's so lovelorn with everything? Or do you think that they see? Because I don't, at this point, I don't think I'd suspect Rick liking Lisa.
You know what? I think everybody's young. And that kind of teasing thing is kind of a show of endearment.
Yeah, that makes as much sense as anything else. I think that they just kind of liked it because, you know, Rick seems like he's always in some kind of mood about Min-Mei, you know?
Right.
And so they just attribute it to whatever it is with him. And so when it comes to another female that he's kind of bumbling about, they're going to take it as, oh, he likes her too.
Yeah, I like that.
All right. So now Breitide is using the antenna on the ship to walk on it to get to wherever he's trying to go.
Right. And again, I'm imagining a force field around the ship.
That is not true, my man. There is no shield.
This is pure gumption walking in the vacuum of space.
We will learn about it in the next episode.
So then we're cutting over to Max using his laser on the airlock, but it's overheating. So Rick tells him to switch out with Ben so that they can kind of take turns doing that.
And then up above, you can see Britai has entered the re-entered the ship, and he's getting ready for an attack. And this time he's got a weapon in his hand.
He does. He has a pipe. And you know, you have to think, how big is that pipe?
Yes.
All right. So Britai once again drops down from above.
And once again takes out Rick.
They end with this action still. Britai crushing Rick, Max, and Ben in the background watching. And they haven't used this type of still frame often. I know they used it in the first episode, and I couldn't think of another example, but it's a great action still. Like the kind that you would want for your phone background.
Yeah, like, you know, I have a little game room set up with my board games and all that kind of stuff. And if I had that frozen, you know, in like a wall frame, I'd love it. I'd love it.
That'd be great. So I think kind of the fact that they use it sparingly makes it so much more impactful. And that's where they end the episode. And I think that was a brilliant move, you know?
That was a cliffhanger, right?
Oh, man. Way to go. Way to go.
As the episode ends, our friendly narrator comes on and he gives us a little bit of insight into the next episode. And he tells us that the three are captured and brought before the Supreme Commander. So what that sets us up for right now is we know in the next episode, there's no chance of escape.
They did not escape. But here's the thing. The narrator says that Lisa, Rick, and Ben are captured. What happens to Max?
I guess we're going to have to wait and see.
We are going to have to wait and see, aren't we? All right. So, given that, what's your rating for this episode?
My rating, I would go ahead and give it an 8.9.
Ooh, wow. I like it. 8.9. What was it missing?
Okay, so first, the explanation of that planet. I didn't know what the heck that planet was.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, it should have explained a little bit more of the difference of what a tarantula was. You know, they announce it out there. They throw it out there.
Yeah.
And then they don't explain anything about it. You know, it doesn't look any different than like a cyclops that I've seen, you know?
Right.
And a little bit of continuity. Rick being the dead pilot, you know, or when he lands and then he goes to go see Min Mei. It's just a little bit of inconsistency. Well, I mean, there was kind of a lot of inconsistency that I was like, that's hard to piece together. You have to piece it together on your own,
right?
And hope that you're on the right track, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I was a little bit harsher. I ranked it a 7, and it was for all those same reasons. The fact that I had watched it, I had watched the original broadcast, I had watched the remastered edition, and I watched the original Japanese version. All in an attempt to understand this episode, and I still didn't get it. All the areas you just described, but most specifically the Lisa flashback and Claudia announcing that isn't that Rick's Battaloid?
I see justification for a low score. It's just that it gave me too much Britai, and I love me some Britai, you know.
You're right. I think the respect I hold for Britai over what he did, I think it does require an 8. Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and update my score. It's an 8. It's an 8 episode.
I think 8 is fair.
Yeah, I really think it is. Who's your MVP?
Got to be Britai.
I agree with that. But I'm going to go ahead and give my MVP to the unnamed Cat's Eye Recon pilot.
If nothing else, he definitely deserves a shrine, you know?
Yes.
You will not be forgotten.
That's it. That's episode 10. We want to thank you again for joining us and listening.
We are on the road to our 500 Instagram followers. And remember, once we hit the 500, a lucky fan will get some pretty cool Robotech merchandise.
Yeah, definitely. I am happy that there are 85 episodes that we're going to get through. It gives me a little bit of anxiety when I think about this ending because it is... I've said it so many times, but honestly, it is the best part of my week. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah. Everybody stay safe.